SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to SBS News.
Cost of Living Secrets. Brought to you by Ricardo Gonsalves and Peggy Giacomelos for SBS News.
Peggy, why is it every time I go to the supermarket with the intention of buying just the essentials, milk, maybe some toothpaste and bananas, and I walk out with $100 worth of stuff?
I find same thing. I go in there to buy a couple of things that I might need, and then I end up with a collection that I've developed of moisturisers and sunscreens that are usually half price. But yeah, that same thing happens to me, mate.
That's the funny thing, right? You see something that's half price or on sale and you start buying it. But let's talk about how we can save money every day at the supermarket with Nitika Garg. She's a professor at the University of New South Wales School of Marketing. Nitika, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Why is it that Peggy and I, for example, come out spending more than we intend to? I mean, I know I've got these good intentions. I find myself slowing down, though, at the supermarket, singing along to the music that they play, and because I'm just so stimulated by all the colour in there.
That's absolutely intentional when you think about the supermarket tactics. So they have several things in place to get consumers to spend more time in the stores and therefore end up spending more in terms of the money spent in the store. So supermarkets, for example, have their own channels, their own music channels, and they curate them specifically for times of day, for seasons of the year to help consumers move slower or faster depending on what they need. And the layout of the store, the colors, like you said, you know, the deals that they flash to us, they've all trained us over time. And there are psychological reasons why we end up spending more.
And one of the other things is the layout of the store. So, for example, when you're entering the store, you're going through the grocery section, the fresh food section, and the frozen food's usually on the other side. It's probably set up for obvious reasons to get us to spend things in between. But what about at the end of aisles? Is that a place that marketing takes place as well that we might not be aware of?
Absolutely. So we call them the end cap displays at the start of the aisles and at the back. And they are actually very price real estate in the retail setup, right? Because they get the eyeballs immediately. So as the consumer is walking through the aisles, or even if you look at the store at the front, you end up seeing them. And that's where the deals are advertised, especially for junk food and, you know, your soft drinks, to attract consumers to spend on those kinds of products.
When you walk into a supermarket, typically, you start with fresh food. Why do you start with fresh food? I find, as a shopper, when I go and I'm a bit more planned and I've got a basket, I don't want my fresh food at the bottom. So I'm going somewhere else first and coming back to the fresh food section.
That's a great question. They do it because, one, they sometimes advertise what we call loss leaders. These are products that they're selling at cost or maybe even below cost or making just minor profit to attract consumers in. And fresh food is important because a lot of households will end up buying them. So, you know, you have your fruits like strawberries right now and so on, or any seasonal product, they will advertise it to get the consumer in. And it's also attractive to see all the colors, and then slowly you can make your way through the rest of the store.
So what Ricardo's doing by going to the opposite end of the store or to another aisle is probably a more sensible option in terms of saving money, do you think?
If you have to end up buying the fresh produce, sure, go for it in whichever order. But be mindful of the tactics in play, because they do want you to go through as much of the real estate in the store as possible. Now, I know Ricardo wants to say something, so yeah.
I'm curious at the psychology of shopping and what happens to our brain when we see all of these yellow tickets on the shelves that'll say, you know, prices are down, buy two for one.
Yes.
What happens to our brain? Because sometimes I go to the supermarket thinking, I don't necessarily need to buy this, but because it's on special, I think I'll get it because I've got a good deal.
Absolutely. And that's what they've done over time, right? There are different cues, and these could be region specific. But for us in Australia, for example, the red or yellow stickers signal a deal in supermarkets. So we end up paying special attention to them. So as a result, we, like you said, sometimes end up picking something just because we think, oh, this is such a good deal, or it might be such a good deal, let me just get it, because what if I don't get it tomorrow? And that every time we get a good deal, psychologically, we get a dopamine hit, right? It's like a pat on the back. Oh, how good of me, right? I ended up doing something great. So getting a good deal, getting, whether it's on something as small as a shampoo or a house, it's a dopamine rush. And consumers thrive off of that. And supermarkets know that and play off of it.
When do you actually know, though, when you're looking at those yellow stickers or any other kind of specials advertising, that you're actually getting a bargain?
That's a good point, Peggy, because the one that I hate the most is the one that says if you buy two packets of dishwashing tablets for $40, you can get two of them. But if you get one, it's $30. But sometimes I only just need one.
Exactly. And that's a tricky question. And it's really difficult for consumers to navigate, because it means that if you have to assess a deal and see whether it actually is a good bargain or not, you need to hold what we call reference prices, right? Which is simply speaking, what are you comparing that price to? Right? How do you know it's a deal? Mm. Is it just because of the sticker? Or do you actually remember that you used to pay $30 for it and now you're only paying $20? Right. The other thing is that you have to make sure that if you're getting it, even if it's a deal, will you end up using it all? Right. Now, maybe dishwashing tablets. Yes, you could, if you have the space to stock two packets, that might work. But think of fresh produce, or think of, you know, perishable goods. That doesn't work out very well for consumers a lot of the times.
And there's that opportunity cost too. So by spending that $40 instead of $30, you could be doing something else with that $10 right now.
Absolutely. You're making a trade-off, right? Should I do this or should I get something else? Because most households are trying to balance budgets, especially with the cost of living crisis at hand.
And there are other tricks that supermarkets use as well when you're going to shop. Tell us more about those.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about the store layout, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked a little about how they position some produce, fresh produce in the front or the end cap displays. But most consumers might not realize that the reason why you find it so frustrating at times when shopping, you know, the milk is in one corner and the bread is in the other and eggs are in completely different place, is very, very intentional. Again, with this idea of most households need to get those products, and they'll end up going through the entire store in the process. Mm. And end up picking up different things as a result. Like you said, maybe because they're a deal, maybe because they remember that they have to buy those products. Music, we've talked about. Then, you know, things like what's at the checkout counters. Mm. Even that is very intentional. They put candy out there. They put, you know, those magazines, which you won't end up buying specifically. You know, the color scheme as well, different stores. Supermarkets less so, but otherwise other retailers use colors a lot as well to move us faster or slower.
Should you be shopping with kids? Is it true what they say about the level of where products are placed if it's trying to attract children? They're at children eye height?
It works for adults and kids, right? So for adults as well, the more expensive products which have more profit margin for the retailers are placed at eye level shelving, which is more expensive, right? It's, and the cheaper product in that same category, for example, if you want to buy salt, cold salt will be stuck at the bottom or at the top, which is harder for consumers to pay attention to, and they're not making that much money off of it. Kids, yes, they'll organize slightly different. They'll place it at kids' eye level versus, you know, adults.
And when you talk about all this promotional activity, how does a supermarket retailer decide what goes on sale?
That's another good point or great point about understanding how this is planned. So I was reading some statistics, and apparently it's close to 50% of the times they advertise junk food, candies, and so on, because these are discretionary purchases, right? You don't have to buy chocolate. You don't have to buy fizzy drinks. But if they're advertised, you might just as well, you know, most of us just get tempted and pick it up. So a lot of times it's dictated by that. Sometimes it's also a question of where are their margins, and sometimes it's because they want to move the inventory. So let's say they're reaching the end of best before dates for something or close to the expiry, they'll put that item on a deal because it's better for them to move it off their shelves.
Nitika, just getting back to layout, what about demographics? So for example, in Sydney, the layout of a store in, say, Lakemba compared to Double Bay, would that be different according to demographics? Do they take that into account?
Yeah, they do. I mean, the fact that they'll be spread out will stay. But what is on the left of the store and the center of the store or the right, that might change, right? That depends on maybe the actual infrastructure of the store, the space that they have, because let's say metros or smaller stores, for example, they have less space, so they are going to increase their margins and stock less product. So as in fewer variety. Mm-hmm. So it depends on a lot of factors, including obviously the location.
And we're seeing a bigger trend of these smaller supermarkets around the cities, especially in the urban areas. But why is that?
That's because, I mean, these markets or these stores get a lot higher profit margin for the retailers. So one originally or in the past, the reason or the rationale behind this was that these are the stores where consumers are probably just going in for one or two items, right? Like you got off the train or metro and you just want to pick up milk because you know you've run out of it, right? You're not doing your whole shop. But what we are seeing more and more is even in residential areas, a lot of the supermarkets are converting their stores into metros because they can stock less items and they can ask for more margin because typically they are saying, we are giving you convenience. And for that convenience, we're going to charge you more. But the problem becomes when it is your main store.
If we're doing a podcast about how to save money every day, let's talk about that in more detail. What are some tips to save money while you're shopping at the supermarket?
So number one thing, think through your list. Have a list. Don't think, oh, I'll remember. And I just want to go in for milk and veggies. Because like Guilty. Ricardo was saying, you think you're going to pick up two things and before you know it, it's $100 worth of groceries or things in your trolley, right? So make a list, try and stick to it as much as possible. Obviously, we know that sometimes you just might forget to put, let's say, salt on the list and you're running low. And that's fine. Or you might want a candy bar and that's okay as well. But understanding then the tactics that are in play, that it is very, very intentional how things are organized is the first step as well. The more informed you are as a consumer, the better you will be. And finally, something that I always suggest, but I know it's really hard for consumers, because we are not only sort of under crunch financially right now, but we're also time poor, right? Think about young families. They can't really, you know, trot the kids to multiple stores. But really, if you want to spend or save money, that's one of the suggestions as well. Go to different stores because they have different specials and you'll end up saving money if you could do that.
And switching to house brands, is that, we hear about that a lot. That's obviously still a thing.
Yes, absolutely. And that's growing. So all of the retailers, all of the big markets, you will see more and more products offering a house brand. So those are usually good alternatives because you can compare the ingredients, for example, if you want to make sure that you're getting the same thing, and they're usually offered cheaper because the retailer does not have to engage in advertising of those products. The retailer doesn't have to pay the margin to the manufacturer, original manufacturer. So it's an in-house product. And it is a lot cheaper. So you just need to be sort of compare, spend some time understanding what the differences between a name brand and a house brand.
And in the fresh food section, what about things like keeping an eye out for ugly produce? And then what about those prepackaged between loose type items? Is there a saving that can be made there?
Absolutely. And I actually am doing research with my student on ugly produce right now, because that model is completely wrong. Usually that those produce are right now being sold at cheaper price. Mm. And there's some emerging research showing that they're actually more nutritious. Mm. Yeah. Because we can talk about that. That's probably a separate topic, but they are more nutritious than regular produce. So, yes, absolutely. Look for those deals. And the more the consumers demand that, the more the retailers will offer it. Right now, you have to search for them in the store because the retailer is not making that much profit margin on those.
Just briefly on the nutrition value of ugly produce. Tell us a little bit more about that. I'm very curious.
So I came across some research which is said that because the fruit or the vegetable has to go through more stress, you know, and that's probably why they are blemished or misshapen. Mm. They release certain nutrients to fight that. And
amazing.
Those are actually good for us. So, yes, I know we have all become so used to finding the perfect apple or the perfect orange, but that was not the case just maybe even 50 years ago, 40 years ago. So it's partly sort of what retailers have been putting up on shelf and partly what we are asking for as consumers, but that's probably not the best way to go.
Mm.
One thing I've always been curious about, and you touched on it earlier, was what happens to foods, fresh food, especially when it approaches expiry dates.
Yes.
You said that often they will go and become discounted, but what happens when they've gone beyond that? What happens to that fresh food?
That's a really good question, and I hope more consumers ask that, because for a lot of food produce, it'll once say best before. It will not say expiry, and there's a difference between the two, right? Mm. Best before means that, you know, there might be some loss of taste or nutrition in the produce, but that's not even a guarantee. And that's more in line with the regulations, yep, to be completely, you know, cover their liability. But honestly, strawberry is not going bad if it is past its best, you know, best before. You can see, is the apple okay? Yes, if it's okay, looking okay, eat it. So a lot of times, good food is being thrown out by consumers, and there's a lot of wastage because people think best before is like expiry date and you have to chuck it if it's past that.
Is it thrown out by the supermarket retailers?
They do too, yeah, because they can't legally probably sell it. So they have a liability issue. And sometimes that's why you see this really heavily discounted produce, you know, if it's approaching its best before or expiry date.
And just on that topic, when do they pass food on to food banks and places like that? Are there rules there?
I'm sure they have to follow the regulations, but they would probably negotiate with the food banks that, look, we can give you our inventory if it's 2 days to best before and can you use it? And depending on how much of demand they have, the banks, they might take it or not.
Sure. And in terms of the best day of the week or time of day to get the best buys, do we know much about that, or does it vary from supermarket to supermarket?
Probably varies supermarket to supermarket and even region to region within the supermarket, because it'll depend on their supply chain, right? So when are the trucks coming in? When are they expecting new delivery? Because then they have to shelve it. And then they are going to look to get rid of the existing inventory, especially for perishable goods. So it just depends on what their setup is.
What about loyalty programs where you collect points, where you use a card to collect points to potentially get a discount? I know one supermarket retailer, you do need to tap their loyalty card to get the discount. Another one will offer you points where you can convert those points to, say, gifts or cash back at the cash register. But you've got to give up some of your data, right? So
absolutely.
What's your view?
Again, it's a personal choice, right? It depends on – so if you're sort of – strategic about using these, you can benefit, right? So like you said, there's a trade-off. If I swipe my loyalty card, I'm giving them data such as what did I buy, when did I buy, how much did I buy, what is my pattern, and they can target promotions to me accordingly, right? Mm. Because supermarkets are constantly engaged in market research. They're constantly trying to better understand their consumers, what moves, what worked, what didn't, and adapt to it. So you're giving up that information, but if, let's say, you go to one particular supermarket a lot, then it might make sense to do it, because you can benefit off that. You can get more targeted promotion that is more useful for you, and you can get information about what's coming up.
As a marketing professional, do you use it? Does it bother you?
I use it probably. Does it bother me if I start thinking about it? Yes. But the truth is we are giving up so much of our information just when we are browsing online, right? Going to a store. Every time I'm there, all of the websites are like, what's your cookie preference, right? So you literally have to click every time and say, okay, I just want the strictly necessary cookies. Otherwise, they are sitting on your computer or your desktop and just getting all of the information, all of your browsing habits and so on. So I think we've lost that battle to keep our information private unless we want to live in a mountain with no connection to society. So I'm okay with giving that up. But yes, if I think about it too much, it does bother me a little.
The other question I've got, we've obviously got a very multicultural society. As you mentioned, supermarkets are different depending on where you live in the country. If you're in an area that's quite religious, there might be some foods that are targeted for a particular group. Is it cheaper? Say you wanted to buy some Asian food. Is it cheaper to buy specific Asian food from the supermarket or to go to an Asian grocer?
Oh, that's a great question. And I mean, just as a personal, because we cook a lot of different cuisines at home, you know, Chinese, Italian, Indian, of course, and so on. So I used to, just like 5 years ago, probably, yes, I would say going to an Asian grocer, you'd get more value. But I am not sure anymore. So if you go to one of the big ones, the multi sort of cuisine or multi-ethnic aspect of their offerings has become so much of a mainstay, especially in the urban centers like Sydney, which are, like you said, super diverse and very cosmopolitan. So there, probably not so much.
So what do you think it means then for these smaller REIT supermarket operators, these multicultural operators that do have a variety of specific produce from a particular culture? What happens to them then?
Well, the thing is, they're still offering you a greater variety in that particular cuisine or region, right? So if you go to one of the big ones, you'll get a few items from, let's say, Asian, Italian, Mexican, and what have you. You won't get the full complement of fresh and other, you know, processed foods. So if you want more complicated, more sort of specific ingredients, you will have to go to one of the specialty shops, at least in that right now.
And just finally, we talked about when to go shopping. How frequently should we be going to the supermarket in order not to spend a huge amount of cash?
And on top of that, if it's the last question, the online, more people are shopping online. Do you still get bargains online where you wouldn't get it in store?
All right.
Two questions in one.
Start off with the frequency.
All right. Frequency, there's no right answer, right? It depends on your family situation as well as your household situation in terms of actual how much space you have, right? If you are living in a small apartment with a couple of young kids, you can't store a lot of food products or anything, right? So then you might have to go to the grocery store every second, third day, and that's fine. Most of us probably go once a week, and again, that works. So it just depends. I think what you need to do as a consumer is be more informed about these tactics and then be more present when you're shopping. Don't just fall into automatic pilot mode. You really need to pay attention to what you're putting in your basket and why. I know it's a little stressful, but that's what's needed if you really want to save money. In terms of the online commerce, yes, the tactics change a little. Some of the things are common, obviously, because even there, what goes on the front page, what's at the top in the banner, or what's on the left side, they organize that to get the eyeballs and to get consumers clicking. But they've also started doing something more frequently, I've noticed, which is offering you a deal as soon as you click in. Right, so they say, if you sign up, you get $15 off or $10 off your purchase.
Right.
And that's, again, to get the consumer in. It's just like that fresh produce and the end cap displays. It's just to get you in. Mm-hmm. Now you've given me your information, your email. Now you're committed. Now you're waiting for the $10 coupon, which you will then apply. So that's another way to get the consumer to shop at your store online.
Well, Nitika, I think we got a lot of tips there.
Definitely.
I think even just a reminder just to write a list and keep to the list. I mean, sometimes you just become lazy, right?
Yep.
Nitika Garg, professor at the University of New South Wales School of Marketing, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for this episode of Cost of Living Secrets. Remember to subscribe for more tips on how to save money every day.